separate legal restrictions. Justice Sonia Sotomayor, siding with the majority, emphasized that agencies must still act consistent with applicable law. I'm Scott Baba for Pacifica Radio.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features protests in Kenya dissected. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Wiza Muntali. The music in the background is Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley and the Wailers. 2 days ago, on July 7, citizens in Kenya went to the streets to commemorate the 35th anniversary of Saba Saba, Swahili for 7-7. On July 7, 1990, 35 years ago, Kenyans demonstrated for a multi-party democratic process in the political arena. They were met with brute force by the police in the one-party state of Kenya 1990. In the multi-party political system of Kenya of July 7, 2025, demonstrators commemorating the 35th anniversary of Saba Saba were once again met with brute force by the police. Even the state-run Kenya National Commission on Human Rights accused the police of using excessive force. Multiple people were arrested and killed. These nationwide demonstrations are a continuation of anti-government protests which began last year in June and were generally youth-led or Gen Z-led. Protests were initially against the government's proposed tax increase, mismanagement, corruption, and more. The Gen Z demonstrations forced Kenya President William Ruto to abandon the IMF-inspired and supported tax proposal and fire the majority of his cabinet last year. The Kenyan government has increasingly used harsh clampdown tactics against demonstrators and its critics, such as abductions, the killing in the police custody of blogger Albert Ojwang, and using live ammunition against protesters. Today, the show dissects the protests in Kenya with Valentine Githai, a member of the recently formed 625 movement, and musician activist GT Kariuki, and they are both part of Kenya's Gen Z movement in the Kenyan diaspora. The conversation focuses on the topics such as the genesis of the demonstrations, the demands, police brutality, and the lack of accountability, the political class's credibility deficit, the struggle for a more just and accountable government, economic problems, and more. Here is the conversation I had with Valentine Githai and GT Kariuki 2 days ago on July 7. Valentine Githai and GT Kariuki, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mwiza, for having us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us to unpack the situation in Kenya, particularly as it pertains to the demonstrations, which have been primarily led by the youth, the Gen Z movement, Valentine, you've been on last year. We talked about it almost a year to the day. We talked about the demonstrations which began last year, and you just had the commemorating the 1 year, remembering those who were killed and harassed in those demonstrations last year. And today we're speaking on, as we're having this conversation, we're speaking on Saba Saba 7-7, and Saba Saba 7-7 in Swahili. And that commemorates the demonstrations which took place in 1990 to push for a multi-party democracy in Kenya. At that time, Moi was president. If you could talk to us about those demonstrations today, if you can give us an update on what you've been hearing from home. I don't know who wants to start, GT or Valentine?
Let me start and then I can hand it over to GT. First of all, to even understand what's going on with the Saba Saba today, I'll just do a quick overview of what Saba Saba is. So in June of 1982, the president then, who was his name was Samoei Moi, Gideon Samoei Moi, he decided to change a Kenyan law and make Kenya an official one-party country. So that means no other political parties were allowed. So in 1990, there was a lot of frustration from Kenyans because there was they couldn't air their views openly. There was this police brutality back then, and what we're seeing now, there was corruption and lack of political freedom. So on July of 1990, I'll say the opposition then, I don't know if that's the right name to give them, which had people like Matiba, Rubia, Raila
Odinga. These are called the pressure groups then.
Yeah, sorry, the pressure groups. Yes, the pressure groups then decided to hold a rally then and demand for political reforms. So during that whole time in Saba Saba specifically, there was major protests along Nairobi and other cities in Kenya, and that resulted to a lot of deaths as well. But as a result of that interruption or that disruption, Kenya was able to become a multi-party state. Then we look at today and the similarities. We are fighting, we're not fighting for a multi-party state, but we are fighting for, I'll pretty much say, freedom and the opportunity for ourselves as young people to air ourselves, because we do not have an opposition at the moment in Kenya. The opposition is in bed with the government. So we are still fighting for the same things that were being fought for in 1990, saying we don't want extrajudicial killings. We don't want extrajudicial kidnappings. We want freedom and we want democracy. We want to stop police brutality. And that is happening again. So this Saba Saba march was a couple of things embedded together. The commemoration of, after last year, last week, there was a commemoration of the Gen Z fast protest that happened while rejecting the finance bill. And then there's been multiple deaths due to police brutality. And then there was the remembrance of Saba Saba today.
Yeah, and then GT, if you want to add on to that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe what I've like gathered from like what's happened today, it's the same thing that's been happening, but now it's escalated to a whole different level that, the government has started using more force on the people, going into people's homes. It's gotten out of hand from what I've seen, because like stray bullets are just entering people's homes while they're, minding their own business. Anybody can get it. It doesn't matter whether you go to the streets and protest, whether you're at home, whether you're minding your business, whether you're going to school. It's even unfortunate because I heard a grade 5 kid was shot somewhere in the country. And they've also started using a state-sponsored militia. So they've hired people to go and attack people in the places where they live, to attack their businesses, vandalize, and as well as, even going to hospitals. Like, these people have just lost their humanity. And yeah, but the protests, they are effective. So at this point, we can't stop. We've already passed halfway, and we should just keep pushing for what we're fighting for. We can't give up. The same way the people in the past, the ones that founded the Saba Saba revolution, we have to keep pushing and, fighting for what we want as a country, not just as young people, because we, you know, we want good governance. We're fighting against corruption. And we'll keep fighting for that until they're out of power, until they surrender. And we will do everything that we can within the Constitution of Kenya that gives us the sovereign power.
Yeah, and GT, you were part of the demonstrations that took place last year, and actually you've only come here a few months ago. If you could describe a bit of your that journey, particularly how people were coordinating the demonstrations and the like.
Sure. So like the first demonstration that I ever went for was on June 20th, 2024. And that was actually a beautiful demonstration. It was vibes. Like many people came out and everything. People came out to the streets. If people were working, they'd come out like in the afternoon, like 2-3, and join the rest of us. But now the thing here is like the police did barricade us from crossing to Parliament, because that time it was the hashtag that we were pushing was Occupy Parliament. We were against the finance bill that was, you know, it just had too many oppressive taxes. And with the economy back then, things were already tough enough for the common Kenyan person, common mwananchi, where, you know, many people are living on like one meal a day or one meal every 2 days. So like it just got out of hand. But yeah, the first protest was, it was fine until dark. Now when dark came, like police and civilians started shooting people. And in fact, it's unfortunate, that's the day we lost Rex Masai. But now we learned from that. So we came back on the 25th now. Now on the 25th, that was a big crowd. I've never seen anything like that in my life to this day, like in all the protests that I went for. So yeah, people would come from different fronts. Like we said, you know, we're leaderless, we're tribeless, we're partyless. It's just numbers. And if you check, you know, if you're on Twitter and you're active on Twitter, you'll see there's a hashtag that we've been pushing, Sirini numbers. So like if we have numbers, it's very easy to overpower these police that turn violent against the protesters, because they're the ones who are lobbing the tear gas at us. They're the ones who are shooting people. They're the ones who are abducting people. They're the ones who are unlawfully arresting us. So, yeah, like when the numbers are there, you know, we can win. It's not difficult to win once we have the numbers. And I've seen that, and it's quite promising what we saw on the 25th of this year.
And speaking of the numbers, there have been reports that 10 people have been killed by security forces, I presume. Mm. And are these accurate numbers? Is that an accurate number from the contacts you have on the ground?
No. I wouldn't trust Citizen TV personally, because like that's royal media, and you know, royal media is known for, you know, like working hand in hand with the government. So I'd probably trust like Standard Media Group. They'd be more accurate with the numbers, or closer to an accurate number. But from Gong town alone, just one town in particular, there's a record of 19-20 people that have been killed in just one town today.
Mm-hmm. There was protests in over 17 counties, so we are anticipating, and we're looking at the numbers, and it's definitely more than 20.
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, it's 17 counties out of how many counties in all of Kenya?
47.
47, so that.
Yeah.
And so this is pretty widespread. And something that you said, which we probably should expand on, Valentine, about how the opposition in this particular instance seem not to be, well, they're on the sidelines, to lack of a better word. And do you see that? Is that an accurate description that they're worried about what could happen with this movement for themselves as well? They see, because as you said, that they were part and parcel with the governing party. Do you see the opposition groups, opposition parties, the traditional opposition parties, just sitting on the sideline to try to take advantage and not really be supportive of the people?
Well, sideline is not the word I would use, because they are in bed with the government. So as it stands right now, there is no official opposition party in Kenya that I would say is really interested in about the people's welfare, except the Gen Z movement. The Gen Z movement is the opposition. The former vice president of Kenya, Rigathi Gachagua, is running an opposition campaign, but I strongly believe it's not because he cares, it's because he is not part of the government. And the right now, as it stands, it is Kenyans, or say Gen Z, is now a mindset. It's not just young people, but they are the majority versus the political class. So that is what we are dealing with right now. And yes, I believe that there is a fear of what the political class is doing, and we can see the kicks of a dying horse. And the reason I say this is the Kenyan parliament right now is trying to pass a bill where they want to restrict the freedom of picketing. They want to, in the bill, they are suggesting that they want to regulate what is even written on placards. So we can tell that they are scared. And one of the other strategies that the current opposition is using is ethnic Balkanization. And like Geoffrey mentioned, they are also trying to have goons or a paid militia to continue infiltrating the protests, so that the protests can be, I guess, illegitimized. That's the word I would use. So clearly, yeah, we can tell that the political class is scared. And because they are scared, they are also arming themselves up and preparing themselves up, either by passing laws and policies, inflicting violence. And I'm thinking there might be other strategies that they are cooking that we don't know yet.
And again, that's Valentine Githai. And also with us is GT Kariuki. They're part of the Gen Z movement, and we're dissecting the current protests in Kenya. And as you were talking about the opposition being part of the traditional establishment, and them being part and parcel of really the ruling party, and how they're trying to legitimize the groups. Something that you had mentioned, GT, about some of the civilians, we wouldn't call civilians, that people paid basically by the government forces to shoot at the protests. So that started happening even last year, right? So this is the continuation. Is kind of, they've perfected that as well in this present situation.
Yes, they have. They're basically using the same tactics, and they're running out of moves. So like now they're just starting to, you know, get more violent and instill more fear into people. But, you know, the ones who've been through it already, who have seen what they saw last year, they already know their moves. It's very easy to predict their moves moving forward. So like now it's just a matter of like using a different strategy. And like I believe like today worked, in the sense that people were announcing that they'd go for the protests, but they didn't show up, a particular group. But it's unfortunate that lives were still lost in the process. So like, you know, we're seeing people saying Saba Saba is, you know, it's 7 days straight of protests. So like today was just the first day, and people are saying they're gonna be back on the streets on Tuesday 8th, the whole week. So we'll see how it plays out this week.
So they want to use the word seven for being as a mass movement for 7 days as a continuous protest. And and then also one thing that you were talking about, the way this movement is leaderless, it kind of harkens to the past. There was when there was a one party rule in Kenya many years ago, before you guys were born, there was this movement. It was called the Mwa Kenya movement or something. But I don't know if that was has that been something that people have kind of looked at what people did in the past, whether it was the fight against colonial rule and also the fight against the. That time, when they're fighting the one-party rule of during the Kenyatta regime of the first Kenyatta and then the Moi regime, are they seeing parallels? Seeing that this is probably the best way to speak out, to have a broad-based where you're not having one leader, that you have multiple leaders in each community.
Yeah. That's look at it. But the other approach was like not having a leader. It makes it difficult for the government to identify who they target, whether they want to bribe them, whether they want to abduct them, whether they want to, you know, unalive them, you know, because, you know, we've seen it happen in the past. So it kind of protects us from all those risks associated with being compromised. So that's the whole purpose of being leaderless. There's nobody that can be easily targeted by the government if we don't have a particular leader. And that's what frustrates them so much.
And also to add on that, in the past when we've had leaders, we've seen them being bought by the government and joining the government. So instead of them being part of the movement, they end up becoming part of the government and our issues are not aired and addressed.
And something else you mentioned, Valentine, was how this movement is also, it's no longer, the Gen Z is a mindset. Yes, it was started by the Gen Z generation, but you're saying now it's more, within this last year, it's become more of a mindset within the society. If you can explain that as well, and it particularly hit home with the recent killing of the blogger, who was not, one would say, was he a Gen Z person?
No, he was 31 years old, so yeah. He was a millennial, so pretty much like a Zillennial 1994 guy. So the reason we are saying it's become a mindset, if you look at the protests today, I was looking at a county called Kirinyaga and I was looking at the age group that was there. It was primarily young people, but you could see older people as well. Yesterday at the Kenya National Human Rights, a group of women went to the Kenya National Human Rights urging the police not to kill their children while protesting, right? And they were also attacked by goons. So we can see that this is expanding. During the last week, on the 25th of June, during the protest, there was a Mau Mau veteran in the protests last week as well. So we can see a growth in terms of the capacity and in terms of the thinking that this is becoming very contagious, not just us, not just Gen Zs, but we can see older millennials joining in as well, and as well as Gen X.
And as a result of this expansion of the movement, not just being seen as young people blowing off steam, that is what the establishment would say. You're seeing an increase in the repression of the government of abductions, where you've seen people like Boniface Mwangi. Who was abducted in Tanzania, actually, are you seeing also that the government is actually now working beyond the borders to try to squash these movements as well?
Well, I can't quite tell if the government is doing that, but I would not be surprised, because as it stands right now, there is a virus in East Africa, and this virus is called dictatorship. Kenya was one of the countries that had been enjoying democracy for a while, but we are seeing that influence from Uganda, Tanzania, and say South Sudan, but not necessarily Rwanda, spreading into Kenya. So if, for instance, even if the government was not involved in Boniface Mwangi kidnapping, the way they responded to it was, instead of putting Boniface Mwangi interests first, as he was a Kenyan citizen, they actually thanked the government of Tanzania for kidnapping and torturing him.
Yeah, sorry, and he's also seen not necessarily as a Gen Z. He's been active way before as well. So that also speaks also to the expansion of the movement. Is that right? Is correct?
Yes, Boniface has been in the picture for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's an older millennial, but yes, he is proof that the movement continues to grow every day.
And beyond the people in mostly the towns, have you seen that there's been active participation also in the rural areas as well? Particularly when you said that it was 17 counties involved, so it's also maybe it makes sense that there's been an increase in also activity within the rural areas. Is that correct? Within the country?
Yes. Maybe GT, I'll hand this over to GT. He might know a little bit more than I do, but yes.
Yes, definitely it is. Because, like, I mean, like 17 counties for a day like today, where like Nairobi wasn't among those counties, that's a good number. Because on the 25th, it was around 27, if I'm not wrong. So, yes, there is a growing number. And I believe that there's some places today that the protest just popped up like that without the government expecting that to happen. So it was a good surprise to see that.
And so it sort of speaks to what has been happening within the year, is that there's been a mass organization. Correct me if I'm wrong, the organization that's taking place is not just limited to the Gen Z who are very good on the internet and, you know, TikTok and et cetera. Is it going beyond that? So you're reaching a wider community?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, like, this isn't just for the Gen Z, it's for all the Kenyans. Like, everything that's happening in Kenya right now is going to affect every Kenyan. But the Gen Zs are the ones who are most active, because we're fighting for our future. We don't want to bring our kids into, you know, a country where we don't feel safe in the hands of the police. We don't want to bring them into a place where the leaders are stealing from us, lying to us, giving shoot to kill orders to the police, you know, all those kind of things. We want to bring our kids and the future generations into a better country.
To add on that, currently Kenya's youth population is 70%. There is an increase in economic disparity. So on top of everything GT has mentioned, there is also no jobs, and the cost of living has completely gone up. Last year, we could see the government in the finance bill trying to tax jobs they had not created, which are predominantly like TikTok and YouTube for content creators. So the struggle is not just on a psychological level, it's also in terms of economic disparity, health, education. It's across the whole thing.
Ooh, 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 ooh. And at the heart of Kenya, a new dawn arrives. to get through, stand them, can't do wrong. Gen Z, them a rise up, them a fight. We're on a rocky all day and night. Gen Z, them a rise up, them a fight. We're on a rocky all day and night. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Gen Z, them a rise
up. You listen to a recent conversation that dissects the protests in Kenya with Valentine Githae, a member of the recently formed 625 movement, and musician activist GT Kariuki, and they're both part of Kenya's Gen Z movement in the Kenyan diaspora. Earlier in the break, you heard the song Uhuru na Haki, which is freedom and justice in Swahili, by Umoja Vibes. And the music in the background is Africa Mister by Kasiva Mutua. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW, 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation. Speaking of the struggle beyond in various cross sectors, if you could also mention the key demands beyond the ones which we hear, which is we've been hearing the slogan "Ruto must go," for instance, that's become a big slogan. But what are some of the key demands? Looking at the political economic structure of Kenya.
So the first one I'll say is the police need to stop killing us. The political class cannot kill us and lead us at the same time. So they all need to go. Ruto must go. It does not mean just Ruto. It means the whole political class. The third is we want the families of the victims to be compensated. They still have not been compensated from last year. We still haven't seen the police who carried out the shootings last year being arrested. The current cabinet secretary, Murkomen, who ordered a shoot to kill, we haven't seen the president or anyone in the political class publicly call him out. So there's still so many things that we are asking for, but I think those are the main. If I'm missing something, GT can surely add on to it.
Hi, GT, do you have things to add on?
Yeah, sure. So the reason why we're saying Ruto must go is it's very simple. The Constitution literally clearly states that there's three arms of the government that exist independently from one another: executive, legislature, judiciary. Ruto happens to be in control of all three of them, when he should be only in control of the executive. Right now, with everything that's going on in the country, the Chief Justice is silent. Why? I think the answer to that is very obvious. Again, legislature, MPs, members of parliament are always passing punitive bills that further oppress the Kenyan citizens. Like, take the finance bill for last year, for instance. I'm hearing that each member of parliament that voted for the bill was paid like 2 million shillings. That's like probably around $20,000. If I'm not wrong, if I got the math right. So now imagine, you can't call for the dissolution of parliament because I mean, like, who's in charge of it? It's the president. So yeah, these are the reasons why we're saying Ruto must go.
So he's almost equivalent to, going back to what we said at the beginning, what was happening 35 years ago when people went to the streets for Saba Saba?
Yes, there's no separation of powers. And just to remind everybody, Ruto was a student of Moi. So he is using the same playbook, and I believe even worse, like Moi.
Again, that's Valentine Githae. And also with us is GT Kariuki. They're part of the Gen Z movement in Kenya. They're in the Kenya diaspora here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. And speaking of the diaspora community, what are some of the activities that the diaspora community is doing and working on to following up with things that are happening at home?
So we, the Gen Zs here, have created a movement. It's called the 625 Movement. And the name is exactly, if you Google it, the 625 Movement, you will see what we are doing. So some of the work that we are doing is, we did have a vigil 2 weeks ago to honor the lost Gen Zs that had passed away and the many who've been passing away since last year. We have also been calling out on the government and letting them know that we are keenly watching the atrocities. We are continuously getting engaged in grassroots and civil education to within ourselves here in the diaspora. We have young men and women like GT, for instance, who's an artist. He has amazing music. And he talks, and it's he can talk more about his songs, but it's more, he's creating revolutionary music that can only, that can be, that anyone can relate to. You don't have to be Kenyan to relate to. So that, those are some of the few things that we are doing. We are also working and partnering with organizations here in the diaspora, whether it's PACA or Black Alliance for Peace, to talk about the issues that are happening. And, you know, even just being here on radio with you, Mwiza, to let everybody who is listening, all your listeners, know that there is something happening in Kenya. And this something that is happening in Kenya might have a trickle-down effect with to the countries around Kenya or farther from Kenya. Like, we can see that trickle-down effect all the way in Togo right now. And yeah, that's pretty much it. But mm-hmm. I believe there's more we can keep doing.
Yeah. And then, as you mentioned, all the youth movements, before I asked GT about the music, the use of the music in the mass movements in Kenya, there's also the youth movements that took place a few years ago and there's a Telema in the Democratic Republic of Congo, for instance, DRC. And of course, there was a Bali Citoyen, which is a citizen broom in Burkina Faso, which led to the downfall of Blaise Compaoré, who had taken over from Thomas Sankara and is actually implicated in the assassination of Thomas Sankara. And then, of course, there was the Yarama movement in Senegal, which has been very influential in pushing for positive change in Senegal. And we have a testament of that right now with the new leader, which was elected recently, who's also of the younger generation. So you, as I mentioned, those movements, do you see the Kenyan young movement looking to some of those examples as they continue to work for positive change within the country?
Yes, I do. I mean, the success story of Senegal, you know, it's something that resonates with me specifically. And when I look at a country like Burkina Faso and what Traoré is doing and the mindset of the people of Burkina Faso, we can see that trickle-down effect. We can see positive impact. So this is something that encourages, let's say, me per se every day. And I, you know, we think about the future. What is the new Kenya we want, right? We want a Kenya that is peaceful, a Kenya that everyone has access to healthcare, everyone has access to education, everyone has access to justice, not just the rich and a powerful. And we can see that some of these countries in Africa following that trajectory. So we are not an exception. And I strongly believe that our time is coming. Actually, our time has begun. It might not be as quickly or in the near future as we anticipate, but our time is eventually going to come.
And I don't know, GT, if you wanted to comment on that.
I think she's pretty much spoken on that point. Okay. And exhausted it.
Yeah. And then I wanted to also expand on the use of music in the movement in Kenya. Particularly in your case, as Valentine was talking about how you've used music for the movement in Kenya and beyond.
Yeah, like, you know, like right now, like, I don't know why Kenyan artists are so scared of using their music to empower Kenyans, to give them hope, because like that's what Kenyans need right now. Kenyans need hope, like things are going to get better, things are going to improve, and we're going to get what we're fighting for eventually. And, you know, that's why I just took it upon myself to, you know, like now channel everything into my music, whatever I've experienced out there. Every time I went for the protests, I just put it in the music, whatever I'm seeing on the news, whatever I'm reading, wherever it is, whatever I hear or watch, I just put it all in the music for the Kenyans.
Could you give us some of the examples of songs which you have made?
Oh, yeah.
Which
Sure. I currently have a new release that I released on the 25th. It's called Wantam, Wantam. It's on all streaming platforms. My artist name is Gold Trigger, GoldTriggah, on all streaming platforms. Yeah, that's just one of the few. That's just one of many, because I've been actually using my music to voice people's grievances and stuff for a while now, since the COVID times.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. When you say Wantam, is it in Swahili or
Wantam? It's like, you know, like that's just the way you pronounce it in a Kenyan accent, like mm-hmm. one term.
Wantam.
Term. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wantam. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, it's in English or?
Yeah. It's actually in both. I put English and I also put Swahili. A bit of Swahili in there. Yeah. So.
And, yeah. Okay.
He's a Wantam. One time for the brothers and sisters lost in resistance, fighting the system. Two time for the mothers that miss them. Jah is my witness, comfort he give them. Smack him with a shoe, Mr. Wantam. He be getting hunted by the Wantam. Tommy's of the essence like a Wantam. Impeach him, he's a Wantam. Congratulations if you voted in the president. I'm fascinated by his gift of speaking with the dead. I wonder why he's wanted dead by many fellow men. Tell Kibaso stay away, I am not his friend. Took advantage of the movement. I could tell that he rehearses lines. And if you did send him money, then just know you fell for lies. Am I wrong if I say that someone deserved to be crucified like Jesus Christ or Simon Peter? They the ones that paid the ultimate sacrifice. And the current date in mind is June 25. Glad to still be alive, but it's sad to see the repercussions in abductions.
Yo. And as you mentioned, the COVID, when you're using it during the COVID experience, when we had this mm-hmm. situation, the COVID emergencies, they will also demonstrate protests during that time as well because of the restrictions, in especially in the townships. And mm-hmm. Can you expand a bit on that and how that's also impacted the current movements?
Now that was really there wasn't a big turnout on that one because of one, the restrictions, and then two, like, I don't think people were radicalized enough to go out as they are today. So like, yeah, there wasn't that, they didn't have the drive to like go to the streets because things were not as bad. I mean, like, as much as people were restricted from moving, the curfew and everything, the economy was not as bad as it is right now. So like, people still had things to do and a lot to be grateful for. But now everybody's waking up. Everybody has realized that, you know, if we don't go to the streets, nothing's going to be done. And that's why we have to keep, you know, every opportunity you get, you go for the protest. And another thing that I realized, every protest that you go for, you always learn something new. You always learn how to come up with a new strategy. So it has been effective. So like from back then, that was just setting the momentum for where we are now. And where we are now is setting the momentum for where we'll be tomorrow.
So you don't think the... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Valentine.
I was just going to say, and just to add on what GT is saying, in 2020, Uhuru Kenyatta was the president. He did not abduct us and kill us because his ego was hurt. Right now, we have a president who is getting mad because of memes and silhouettes and is kidnapping young people because of memes and silhouettes.
And do you think, I was going to ask you actually, you mentioned the abductions and the other... the killings of people, so that you don't see that as has had any major effect on people's feeling of going out in the streets, being timid about it. About you think that that's actually mobilized more people?
When we lose our fear, they lose their power, and there is a lot of young people who feel like they have given up already. They don't feel, they're feeling depressed. They don't know what, how to make ends meet, right? Young people can't even, you know, we can't get married. We can't start businesses. We can't pretty much do anything because of how the government, how the economic disparity is right now. Inflation, there's, if we don't fight, there's pretty much nothing. If we don't fight, we have no country. That is the situation on the ground, and that is the sad truth. A few days before June 25th, we saw images and videos of young Kenyans preparing their obituaries and preparing their funerals in advance before the protests, coming up with a what's it called? The picture. I don't know what it's called. Like the
eulogy.
Yes, yes, with the eulogy. So it's gotten to that point. It's like we live or we die. But if we don't do what we are doing right now, we will not have a country. Kenya will not be in existence.
And finally, what would you want to have people take home with as we conclude this conversation? I'll start with yourself, Valentine, and then we'll... and then GT.
I hate that I have to say this, but for us to get to where we want to be, we have to fight and we have to have consistency. There's a famous saying by Yuval Harari, and he says, if the future of humanity is decided in your absence because you're too busy feeding and clothing your kids, you and they will not be exempt from the consequences. This is very unfair, but who said history was fair? So we are hoping that those in the opposition, those resistant to change, those who still have are playing tribal games and on the sidelines of ethnic, being in ethnic balkanization, see what is going on and join us. We're hoping the police see that they are being used as pawns by the political class for their own gain, and instead of killing us, to join us. So that is what I'm hoping, that they will, those who have not joined us yet, learn from this, and hopefully they will be a part of the change that is coming.
GT?
Yes. I believe the next strategy that should be implemented is a total economic shutdown. What do I mean when I say this? It's people should just close businesses, close places of work for an entire week, and the government will feel it. And once they feel it, they will be helpless. And they will have fewer options to choose from. And after that, we'll see what happens. And there's no telling what happens until we start as soon as tomorrow or as soon as today.
GT Kairuki and Valentine Githai, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Just been listening to a recent conversation that dissected the protests in Kenya with Valentine Githae, who's a member of the recently formed 625 movement, and musician activist G.T. Kariuki, and they're both part of Kenya's Gen Z movement in the Kenyan diaspora. The conversation focused on the topics such as the genesis of the demonstrations, the demands, police brutality and lack of accountability, the political class's credibility deficit, the struggle for a more just and accountable government, economic problems, and more. You can revisit conversation on Africa Now's SoundCloud page. That's Africa Now online on SoundCloud. The music in the background is Mbongo by Franco and TP OK Jazz, remembering Franco Luambo Magadi's birthday, and he was popularly known as Franco, and his birthday was July 6th. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muizo Mutale. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shayanana with Zain El-Amin, which looks at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East, particularly spotlighting the plight of Palestinians. And that's followed by the women's collective Sophie's Parlor, which is followed by The Browder File with Tony Browder, which is followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly. And that's followed by Kombitla Kai with Eugenia Charles, which looks at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. And thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks also to our engineers Michael Nasella and Claire Chapman. And also our research fellow volunteers Chana Kozer and Funan Gonda. And our Africa World Now Project collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Otterson. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. Continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. We're going to leave you the closing song entitled One Tam by Gold Trigger, also known as G.T. Kariuki. And we played that also during the conversation we had today. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
He's a one tam. One time for the brothers and sisters lost in resistance, fighting the system. Two time for the mothers that miss them. Jah is my witness, comfort he give them. Smack him with a shoe, Mr. One Tam. He be getting hunted by the phantom. Tam is of the essence like a one tam. Impeach him, he's a one tam.
Congratulations if you voted in the president. I'm fascinated by his gift of speaking with the dead. I wonder why he's wanted dead by many fellow men. Tell Kibaso stay away, I am not his friend. Took advantage of the woman, I could tell that he rehearses lines. And if you did send him money, then just know you fell for lies. Am I wrong if I say that someone deserved to be crucified like Jesus Christ or Simon Peter? Ah, they the ones that paid the ultimate sacrifice. And the current date in mind is June 25. Glad to still be alive, but it's sad to see the repercussions and abductions. Yo.
One time for the brothers and sisters lost in resistance, fighting the system. Two time for the brothers and missed them. Jah is my witness, comfort to give them. Smack him with a shoe, Mr. One Tam. He be getting hunted by the phantom. Tam is of the essence like a one tam. Impeach him, he's a one tam. Get rid of your land, throw it away. They live by fear, but we live by faith. We'll win this war sometime, someday. Somehow, someway, we'll find a way. Kwani iko nini, weza kayo shukachini. Kisongo, yaka songo, inaitaji mangumi. Uliza kia
watu wachana na kina boni usaliti ufisadi ubaguzi hamchoki Vasco danganya amechuzo wea sana ati tupunguze gharama ya apana stories za jaba usiku hadi mchana tuko na sababu ya kuwapea lawama
Vasco danganya amechuzo wea sana ati tupunguze gharama ya apana stories za jaba usiku hadi mchana tuko na sababu ya kuwapea lawama
one time for the brothers and sisters lost in resistance fighting the system two time for the brothers and sisters
For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, July 9th. Here are some headlines. Recovery efforts in Central Texas continue today in the aftermath of deadly floods over the 4th of July weekend. At least 119 people have been confirmed dead across six counties, and more than 160 are still missing. Rescue for the 160 people who remain missing looks less and less likely as the rescue enters its fifth day. Also notable are the extreme floods which occurred in New Mexico yesterday, killing three and sweeping away entire houses. Two of those killed by floodwater in New Mexico were children. Returning to Texas, many of the deaths occurred at a summer camp. Texas's Department of Health inspected and cleared Camp Mystic as safe on July 2nd and a mere 2 days before the flooding. The flooding has started a political frenzy as people look for who, if anyone, to blame and work to prevent this disaster from happening again. Experts emphasize that the region's thin soil combined with intense rainfall created extreme and rapid flooding conditions. Artificially controlling the river may be the only way to guarantee this disaster never happens again. In other news, at least 40 Palestinians, including 10 members of a family sheltering in a tent, were killed in Israeli airstrikes in the Gaza Strip, hospital officials said today. The strikes come as President Trump pushes for a ceasefire that might end the war and free dozens of Israeli hostages. Trump met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for the second time in 2 days at the White House yesterday, but there was no sign of a breakthrough. Hamas has insisted that any deal must pave a path to a complete and lasting cessation of hostilities. Netanyahu has insisted that Israel will agree to that only if Hamas's military wing and government are dismantled. In more news, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, in its most recent update, is warning that the fuel crisis in Gaza, due to the Israeli blockade, has reached a critical point and will cause further deaths and suffering in the besieged Palestinian territory. In more news, Russia launched a record 728 drones at Ukraine overnight in what the Ukrainian Air Force calls the largest drone attack on Ukraine in a single day since the war began more than 3 years ago. Ukraine claimed most of the drone attacks were intercepted by its air defense units. Russia's record attack comes after the Pentagon said on Monday that it will send additional defensive weapons to Ukraine at the request of President Trump, reversing a Pentagon decision a week ago to pause air defense shipments already en route to the Ukrainian military. The bombardment also comes after Trump, during a cabinet meeting yesterday, lashed out at President Putin for not doing more to achieve peace.
And I'm not happy with Putin. We get a lot of thrown at us by Putin, for you want to know the truth. He's very nice all the time, but it turns out to be meaningless.
throughout Trump's campaign leading up to the 2024 presidential election, he said he could end the conflict